Good afternoon. The time is about 3 o'clock, and you are tuned to KTOO News. This is a Juno afternoon for Tuesday, November 12th. My name is Martha Moore. We have a great lineup for you today, some interesting topics. We'll be talking with Pam Finley and Steve McFeeters and Jan McFeeters about Church of the Holy Trinity's Pi-a-thon. Tom Cosgrove and Amanda Compton will be here to highlight tonight's Mudrooms event. We'll talk with Michelle Federico and Katie Chapman about the film The Anonymous People, showing this week at the Goldtown Theater. Shona Strausser will be here with details about the Perseverance Theater's Young Company. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more. The forecast today is calling for rain, highs around 42.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal leaders from across the country are in Washington, D.C. this week for the White House Tribal Nations Conference. Obama is meeting with a group of leaders today at the White House. On Wednesday, one representative from the country's 566 federally recognized tribes is invited to the Interior Department for a meeting with Obama and his administration. Tribal leaders will also be advocating for their people on Capitol Hill by visiting members of Congress. U.S. Alaska Senator Mark Begich says it's important for tribes to reach out to lawmakers who may not know much about their issues. Begich says in the last 5 years, 35 new senators have come into the Senate.
Some of these people just want to learn. They don't know. They're from states that, you know, New York, for example. I can tell you the two senators there do very little about tribal issues, even though there are some tribes in New York. But they don't, you know, they're mostly around New York City stuff. So if I can expose them to a couple of these things, maybe they become more friendly about our issues.
Begich says tribal leaders are ready to make the most of their meeting with the president.
The president's made it very clear that tribal consultation is important, but I think the president's going to be in for a little more oomph this time because they've had 4 years of consultation. They want to make sure action follows consultation.
Begich met with Alaska tribes last month at the Alaska Federation of Natives annual gathering in Fairbanks. Speakers at the AFN convention addressed delegates about issues they're working on with the Obama administration. Mayor Stanley Mack of the Aleutian Eastboro says for 10 years he's been directly involved on a national, state, and local level working to build a road to connect King Cove to Cold Bay, known as the Eisenbeck Road. Mack says it's about the health and safety of residents during medical emergencies.
Due to the topographic constraints and constant changing of weather and winds in a narrow volcanic valley where the King Cove airstrip is located, King Cove residents can access Cold Bay Airport only 60% of the time. The Cold Bay Airport is the fourth largest runway in the state of Alaska. It's over 10,000 feet long. It is our only connection to Anchorage and the outside world.
Interior Secretary Sally Jewell visited King Cove in August. Mack says they're waiting on her for approval. The King Cove Corporation in the state would exchange 60,000 acres of land for 200 acres of federal land in the Eisenbeck National Refuge for a one-lane gravel road. Mack says they have not seen much government support, but points to Obama's White House Council on Native American Affairs. He says language spelled out in the council's priorities may help the community be heard on the road issue.
Promote the development of prosperous and resilient tribal communities in supporting greater access to health benefits. For the Kinko values, we believe this means a one-lane road, 7 miles long, so a small portion of the Eisenbeck Refuge to Cold Bay Airport can be achieved.
Mack hopes the Obama administration will make a decision this week. Leaders of 9 South Dakota tribes are advocating in the nation's capital for help with foster care. The leaders hope to resolve allegations that the state removes too many Native children from their homes and places them with non-Native families. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Tribal leaders are concerned about what they say are violations of the Indian Child Welfare Act, or ICWA. The law requires that Native American children removed from their homes be placed with relatives or other American Indian families, except in unusual circumstances. Tribes contend too many children are placed in homes other than those falling under ICWA guidelines. State officials say they comply with the federal law. The Sioux tribal leaders plan to hold a press conference and a demonstration this week while they're in Washington. Governor Dennis Stuggart has shown support for the tribe's efforts to run their own child welfare and foster care services. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellen Bolt.
On this day in 2012, Navajo code talker Chester Nez received a diploma from the University of Kansas College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. The veteran left the school 60 years earlier after exhausting his GI Bill. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to KTOO News. This is Juno Afternoon, and I've been joined in the studio by Steve McFeeters, Jan McFeeters, and Pam Finley, and they are here to talk pies. Thanks for coming in, everybody.
Thank you for having us.
So the event they're going to be talking about is the Church of the Holy Trinity's Pie-a-thon. So what is a pie-a-thon? Tell us about that.
Well, it's an idea that we're picking up from a group of English handbell ringers from Seattle, Washington. The handbell choir is Bells of the Sound, uses this for about the last 5 to 6 years as a wonderful money raiser. It just so happened that our daughter is a part of that handbell choir, and she has got us into helping her make these pies down there. So the concept is great, and we're bringing it to Juneau to their wonderful pies. They are ready to bake or to freeze, and they're very delicious. The recipe is just great, and we're hoping that the people of Juneau will step forward, and they are great gifts, and they're also, for the holiday seasons, wonderful desserts.
And this is the new event for Juneau?
Yes. Absolutely.
And who will be making these pies?
We will be making these
the
pies.
Three of you?
With the help of probably 15 or 20 other people that will have different stations. We'll have apple peeling station, the actual putting the sliced apples into the pie dough rollers, so it's all fresh ingredients that you can take home and smell the aroma of a fresh baked pie that you have not had to put together.
And how many pies do you think you'll make?
Well, we're limiting ourselves to 200. So far, we've got about, yes.
That's a lot of
it's
pies.
It's a lot of pies. I kind of doubt we'll quite get to that this year. Perhaps in future years we will. I think we've got at least 50 orders now, because you can either order the pie for yourself, or as you know, for a gift or such, or you can order a pie to donate to the Glory Hole. We'll take them to the Glory Hole too. And I think about at least a third of the ones that we've had so far have been donations to the Glory Hole. So it's a kind of nice thing. Mm-hmm. You can get them for many purposes.
That's wonderful.
This is one of the gospel. This is one of the traits of the pie selling in Seattle area, that the Bells of the Sound also offers this opportunity, and they have given over 150 pies a year to the Union Gospel Mission for the homeless and who provide food for the folks in Seattle.
So if you think apple pies are a lot of calories, you can still buy an apple pie, and it'll go to the Glory Hole here in Juneau, or you can purchase a virtual pie, calorie-free.
Oh, and eat it virtually.
Eat it virtually, right. You just give us the money, and then you don't have to deal with
and
the pie.
No pies are involved.
That's right.
So I can see where Seattle has lots of apples around. Do we have enough apples in Juneau for this?
Well, we've special ordered them,
okay.
So we're going to be, yes, we don't really expect to just be able to go wipe the shelves clean here, or we don't want to do that at any rate. So
we'll be using fresh Johnnigold apples that Fred Meyer is actually ordering for us.
Yum. So what is the pie making day?
It's the 23rd. 23rd. Yeah, 23rd Saturday, and people will pick them up from noon to 4. We assume that we'll have enough by noon to
Actually, the night before Friday night, we start making the dough and preparing for Saturday. It's a sort of, somewhat of a process to set up the tables and put all the ingredients, and so it's an assembly line operation. And the more you're prepared the night before, the more efficient it it goes off on the next day.
And the Saturday is, of course, the Saturday right before Thanksgiving, so
that's right.
The timing is perfect.
Thanksgiving, and then Christmas is just around the corner.
And these do last.
They do last. Our daughter, Wendy, just baked her last pie this month that was made a year ago.
Wow.
And it was absolutely delicious.
Wow. Well, that's good.
So it works.
So what does the person do to go about getting a pie?
Okay, well, there are two ways you can do it. You have to get an order form, and you can do that by going to trinityjuno.org on the web, and there you can print out the order form, or you can go to the church at 4th and Gold and pick up an order form. Now, once you fill out the order form to deliver it, you can take it to the church. This is any weekday between 1 and 5. The church office will be open. Or you can just mail it after you've printed it off. You can mail it with your either a check or a credit card information. So you can do it either way.
And how much are the pies?
The pies are $15 a piece. I think they're $10 down in Seattle, but our apples are more expensive, so we had to charge more.
And what does the money go to?
It'll probably just go to the general fund. I mean, with these sorts of things, you really can't do it just for the money because you don't make that much money. You really have to do it sort of for the fun and for some benefit to the community.
It's really an opportunity for fellowship.
Yeah.
For a whole day spent together with a group of people working together and coming out with a nice product. It's a wonderful opportunity for community building, and anybody in Juneau would like to come out and help us. We'll definitely put them to work peeling apples or somewhat. It's quite a process that we've been involved with. Jan and I have been involved with for years, and we are amazed that actually from 8 o'clock in the morning till 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we can produce 700 pies in Seattle. It's a lot of help.
Quite impressive. Do you want to tell us anything about the Holy Trinity Church?
Well, the kitchen, interestingly enough, where we will be making these pies, the kitchen is now an official, it can be used according to the DEC. It is an approved kitchen. We don't quite have the countertops put on yet. They should be coming soon. But the kitchen, it's been a long time coming, but the Glory Hole has actually already used it to make their tamales for their fundraiser. So it's being used, and we're happy about that.
Is the church involved in many community activities?
Yes, quite a few. Probably partly, we always have a big community bazaar. Yes, the Christmas bazaar will be the Saturday after Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And there are always musical events and things like that that are sort of part of the church. Plus, of course, the little plug for Theater in the Rough. They're doing Ladies of the Camellias, and that weekend will actually be the last weekend for Ladies of the Camellias, too. So
we also do an outreach program, too, where we provide food baskets, food boxes, about every other week to families all over Juneau proper who need a little extra help along the way. And
a nice thing to do.
Yeah. And also the funds help also defray some of the expenses of using the hall as well. And so as we look at increasing or the fundraising, we look at absolutely making it a community church and a community center so that folks will feel comfortable and it's easy to be able to be using it.
Okay. I've been speaking with Pam Findlay and Steve McFeeters and Jan McFeeters about the Church of the Holy Trinity's Pie-a-thon. And if you want to pre-order a pie or just get more information about this fundraiser, go to the website. It is TrinityJuno, all one word, .org. And you can find out more about that. And thanks so much, all of you, for coming in, and good luck with your Pie-a-thon.
Thank you very much.
The principal spoke to the school one day. Not enough work and too much play. No more recess, no more fun, no more laughing anyone. Someone told him, here, try this. He took one bite and his face was bliss. He looked so happy that he could cry when he ate a piece of peanut butter pie. Oh, try, try some peanut butter pie. If you don't think it's wonderful, I wanna know why. It sticks to your mouth till you can't say hi. Try, try some peanut butter pie. When I was young, I had a pup. He licked my face to wake me up. Up on the sofa he would jump, wag his long tail, thump, thump, thump. When I'd come back home from town, he would nearly knock me down. We'd roll on the ground, then he and I would eat a piece of peanut butter pie. Try, try some peanut butter pie. If you don't think it's wonderful, I wanna know why. It sticks to your mouth till you can't say hi. Try, try some peanut butter pie. School at three, my mother is waiting there for me. I have chores that I must do. I'll bet that you have some too. First I have a little treat. She gives me a little bite to eat. I chew and I pretend that I am eating peanut butter pie. Try, try the peanut butter pie. If you don't think it's wonderful, I wanna know what. It'll stick to your mouth till you can't say hi. Try, try the peanut butter pie. Try, try the peanut butter pie. Oh, try, try the peanut butter pie.
You are listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO.news, and I am Martha Moore. My next two guests are Tom Cosgrove and Amanda Compton.
Hey, Martha.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Amanda. Hi, Tom. They are here to talk about tonight's Mudrooms performance, and let's just tell me when and where that is before we get started.
Before? It's tonight, 7 p.m., Northern Lights United Church, which is down on 10th and, or no, not 10th, it's 11th and B Street in downtown mm-hmm. Juneau.
And I know that we've talked about mudrooms on Juneau Afternoon before, and so let's just remind the listeners what mudrooms is and what someone can expect if they go there.
Mudrooms is a live storytelling event. And these are real stories from the heart, spoken on stage, generally not memorized. Seven people from our community or beyond get on stage and tell a seven-minute story based on a theme. It's modeled after Arctic Entries in Anchorage, which is modeled after Stoops in Baltimore. So we have a little bit of history, but what you can expect is to come and join 200 of your favorite people in a pewed venue at Northern Lights, and you will get the delight of hearing seven people share just a brief snippet of their lives to you. And what's interesting and sometimes fun about it is you get to see people you really know quite well describe a part of their life you've never known about, or maybe you know it intimately, and so you have that sort of bond with the story.
There's a lot of surprises, often a surprise in there.
People you thought you knew.
Yeah, or sides of people that you've known for years, and it's like, wow, really? And that kind of stuff.
What is tonight's theme?
It's scars. It can be interpreted any way you want.
We have
no idea. I'm expecting physical, emotional. And one of the things, we're constantly recruiting people to do this. And this particular theme was harder to recruit. I guess one of the things is just the nature of it is you're going to be required to open up and talk about a painful experience in your life. So I'm really curious what's going to roll out of this one.
I do know, and I will say as a hook, one story in particular is of a real scar, like a physical scar, that apparently was so traumatic that the young man who's telling it, we have a high schooler, it'll be a second He'll be our second high schooler to speak at one of these performances, and we're in our third season. His parents refused to come because they just didn't want to relive that experience.
Wow.
So it was that difficult, and you get to hear it tonight if you show up.
Yeah.
Okay. Who comes up with these themes?
Nine of us.
there's a board of directors, the storyboard, and we get in a room with a potluck meal and a glass of wine and argue. And this is what emerged from last year. And there's a lot of storytelling events that are going on. This is happening down south now across the U.S. And so there's a lot of things that are popping up. I get emails from a group in Chicago called Second Story, and they often have interesting themes. And so I think a lot of us, we kind of collect them over the year, and then we bring them together, and this is what shook out.
And we take pitches, too, so you're welcome to pitch us an idea.
Yeah, you got a theme that you think would really be great. I'm all up for it. And we're really inviting anyone in the community. Mudrooms.org is how you can get a hold of us. You can sign up, send an email. We're always looking for people. And as we get more people involved, it's kind of a snowball effect. More people learn about it. We get more people. So we're looking for all kinds of people like you, Martha. You would be a perfect mudrooms person. So we got to get you there.
Have to think about that one. Well, I love your themes, really. I've checked them online, and they're just, you know, vague enough to be sort of stimulate your imagination.
And it's widely interpreted. There is no theme police here. Actually, there's been stories you go, okay, now how was that related to the theme? Unclear, but it was the story, for whatever reason, this person was motivated to tell.
If someone wants to tell a particular story, they can make it fit that theme, and we're not going to kick them off.
can you name tonight's storytellers?
Sure. Why don't you go for that?
Tonight we have Bill Hansen, Jameson Paul.
I don't have them in order. Jameson
but
Paul.
But you have a better idea how to pronounce
Quinn
this.
Quinn White.
Olivia.
Oh, Pitache.
Or Pitache.
Pitache. We were arguing about the
pronunciation. She can call and let us know. Yep, Quinn White. Emily Ricci, formerly Emily Cotter until recently. Larry Blatnick and Tony Tangs.
Okay, great.
And so the other part of this, there is live music, and I'm not sure who's playing tonight. Who's playing?
Curtis Stedman.
And it's $7 cash at the door, all profits to charity. The first half of the season, that's Discovery Southeast.
Okay.
And we made about $1,500 last time. I guess $1,300 after we paid out our respective dues. We were able to give that 100% of that to Southeast Discovery, and we hope to make more tonight.
Yeah, next, the second half of the season is going to be Big Brothers and Big Sisters will be the last year it was Dolly Parton's Imagination Station. And, I mean, they raised through the season last year over $6,000.
That's nice. Mudroom's performances are once a month. I know they begin in the fall, and they last until May. Are there still openings at future Mudrooms?
There are future. We do have some openings, but actually we've got a number of things that have closed. I think we're March?
February, we're like on a waiting list of five or six.
No. Oh, January, March,
and
April.
And May.
April and May. So, and we're not looking for anyone next month. Next month is awkward.
Which
December.
Is full, right.
So that ought to be, put that one on your calendar.
And I know Tyler Grass and his dad will be playing music for that.
So yeah, we've got openings.
If they want to see the theme, they just can go online and check that
mudrooms.
Out.
Mudrooms.org.
See if they happen to have a story.
Right, and there's not an asterisk next to it, then it's open. And if there's a spot and you want it, it's all yours.
So is competition for these spots?
No, first come, first serve, and there is no vetting. We are not going to say, what's your story, or, you know, have you done this before? It's really, if you want to do it,
you're willing.
We want to have
a policy where we let people who have spoken previously on Mudroom speak again. You get a one time per policy, and we take two veterans per month.
Oh.
If we don't have any new people.
Okay.
Because there's a number of people that would like to do it.
So I know you, Tom, are an experienced and talented storyteller. How did you get interested in storytelling, and when did you realize you had a gift for it?
I mean, this is a separate thing from mudrooms, but I've been a writer for years, and I was unsatisfied as a writer, and there was something in me that said I wanted to get my writing out to people, and this seemed like an avenue, and I ended up luckily having as a neighbor Roblin Gray Davis, who's a very talented individual, and he was brave enough to say, yeah, I think that'll work, and he took me from knowing absolutely nothing about performance to knowing very little about performance. And so he's allowed me to grow. So now I've been doing shows, just did one last week, a fundraiser for PFLAG. And
which I've got was some very other well received,
I yeah. And I've got some other things. I'm actually doing a series of stories on death, dying, and grief that I'm performing for the certified nursing assistant classes out at UAS, and that'll be once a semester. I'm doing that in a couple weeks. So it's been a great experience. And being involved in this organization, it's kind of like I can pass along this passion because it's like, yeah, try this. And it's kind of cool when somebody's like, oh, I'm really scared. And I'm like, yeah, it is scary to get up there. But when they come down, they're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Just to get to tell that story that's an important part of them, it's very powerful.
Exhilarating.
Yeah.
I know, Amanda, that you were one of the founding members. Bringing it here to Juneau, have you told stories in this venue?
Also? I told one in March last year.
And well, tell us about that.
Well, it was a little awkward because it was a very trivial story about a fear I have, and it was told coincidentally after some people talked about the devastating effects of the Exxon Valdez spill. So the platform I had was a little bit charged, but then I got to tell my riveting story about earthworms.
I loved it. And you know what? The cool thing is if you go out on mudrooms.org, you can go into past, go and
archives.
You can look at the archives and listen to stories. And Amanda's out there in last season. I've got one out there from last season. So.
And if you miss us tonight or you're curious about other ones, we are broadcasting on KTOO on this station, 104.3 FM. And our air date for tonight's will be December 23rd. So tune in December 23rd if you miss it or you want to hear it again. We have a couple of props that I'd like to just share with the you listeners before we run out of time. When our speakers, we are very strict about being 7 minutes because we want this. One thing cool about this show is that it's a low commitment. You can come at 6:45. We do recommend getting there early because we'll run out of room. But we start at 7 o'clock sharp, but you catch the music at 6:45. You sit down. We're done at 8:30 if everyone sticks to 7 minutes. And one way we do that is after 5 minutes, you hear, that is a dough call. And after 7 minutes, when we ask you to kindly wrap it up, and if you're sitting really close to the radio, you might take an inch or so back.
So you know it's time to get off when you hear that.
Well, I think 7 minutes is perfect, a perfect length of time to get a story out, especially for people like me with short attention spans.
It's surprising how quickly it goes.
Yeah, definitely.
So to find out more about this, your website is what?
It's mudrooms.org, or you can find me, Amanda Compton. My generally, I'm co-host with Alita Buss. Tonight, I'll be co-hosting with Tom Cosgrove, who you've heard. You can also find Rich Moniak, Clint Farr, Katie Spielberger, Quinn White is a junior at Juneau Douglas.
Pat Roach. Mark Wheeler.
You can find him at COPA. I think that's it.
And these are your board members.
That's
they
good.
Are. If you know any of them and you're curious about playing music or speaking, you're scared but you need a little bit of encouragement, find any of those people and we will gladly help you out.
Okay. So I'm here with Tom Cosgrove and Amanda Compton. And Mudrooms is tonight at 7 p.m. at the Northern Lights Church. It's a fun event. And tonight's theme is scars.
We'll see you there.
So thanks for coming in.
You bet.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 12th of November, 2013.
It was on this day, 1980, the NASA space probe Voyager 1 made its closest approach to Saturn, giving scientists their best chance to study Saturn's rings, seven main rings, each made up of ice particles, some as big as an automobile, bits of debris from broken-up moons, comets, and asteroids. On Valentine's Day 1990, 10 years later, Voyager 1 was in a position to take what's come to be known as a family portrait of the solar system, six of the planets in one picture, Mercury, Mars, caught in the glare of the sun, Pluto too small and dim to show up. In August 2012, Voyager 1 left the solar system, entered interstellar space. It's now the most distant human-made object in space, almost 19 billion kilometers as of October, and it still sends data back to Earth by way of the Deep Space Network to highly sensitive equipment here on Earth. Voyager is so far away, the signal takes 17 hours to reach us. It's expected to be able to continue its mission until about 2025, when the generators will no longer be able to provide power. It's the birthday of Elizabeth Cady Stanton, born in Johnstown, New York, 1815. She studied law in her father's law office, but was not allowed to take the bar exam or practice because she was a woman. And so in 1848, the first women's rights convention in America was held in her home in Seneca Falls, New York. Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who said, "The moment we begin to fear the opinions of others and hesitate to tell the truth that is in us, and from motives of policy are silent when we should speak, the divine floods of light and life no longer flow into our souls." It's the birthday of the founder of Reader's Digest, DeWitt Wallace, born in St. Paul, Minnesota, 1889. And it's the birthday of Tracy Kidder, born in New York City, 1945, whose book, The Soul of a New Machine, was one of the first non-technical books about the computer, and it won the Pulitzer Prize when it came out in 1981. For his book, House, he wrote about the construction of a single house because he said, building is the quintessential act of civilization. And to write his book among school children, he sat in one fifth grade classroom for an entire school year. Here's a poem for today by Krista Lucas, entitled Gifted and Talented. For my teaching license, I am required to take a class called Mainstreaming, in which we learn about every kind of kid who could walk or be wheeled through our future classroom doors. Not the blind, the deaf, and the handicapped, but students with blindness, deafness, developmental delays, autism, moderate to severe learning disabilities, hyperactivity, attention deficit, oppositional defiance disorder, and so on. The instructor, an elementary principal by day, who outlines each chapter and reads to us these outlines each Wednesday from 6 to 9, devotes 1 hour, one night, to the subject of students with gifts and talents who might also come through our future. Regarding special programs for such students, one teacher candidate asks, "Do you have to be gifted to teach them?" "No," the principal instructor shakes her head, as if such a thing would be impossible. Not many gifted people go into education. Gifted and Talented by Krista Lucas, from her collection Fans of My Unconscious, published by the Black Rock Press and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac, produced by Joy Biles with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You are tuned to KTOO News. This is a Juno afternoon. Michelle Federico and Katie Chapman have joined me in the studio, and they are here to discuss the film, The Anonymous People. My tongue's getting tied. And welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. The film will be shown at the Goldtown Theater tomorrow night at 7 and Saturday at 4. And it is a documentary. What is this film about?
Well, this film is, as you said, a documentary about people living in long-term recovery and really brings to light all of these people who are in recovery and are kind of coming out of the darkness of stigma to talk about what being in recovery is really about.
And specifically recovery related to alcohol and drugs, long-term recovery.
And how does the title tie into that theme? Mm.
Well, anonymous is, I think, a play on the word, reflecting back to the 12-step programs that have a tradition of anonymity and how important that is. But on the level of press, there are people who are not wanting to remain anonymous and to come out and tell their story about what it's like to live in long-term recovery. And as long as we're not identified with a 12-step program, we're free to do that. So this is what this movie is about, is bringing that awareness on a societal level, making it personal. The personal is political, and making that, you know, telling your story, because that's what matters. The story, your story of recovery, affects other people.
There's so many movies that have the addiction as part of the movie, and I'm sure this is different. In what ways is this one different?
Well, if I understand your question, this is more bringing to light the prevalence of alcoholism and drug addiction, just how big this problem is in our country and what that impact is on other people.
Yeah, and how the media likes to focus on the sexy part of addiction, which is the funny, you know, goofy
Charlie Sheen type of
those characters that, you know, we love watching them make buffoons out of themselves, but when they get into recovery, they disappear. And this is that story about what happens when we disappear. Well, all of a sudden we start having normal lives and we look like everyone else.
And there's really a large number of those people.
Right. There's 23.5 million people living in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty impressive. Who produced this film?
I'm gonna let Katie get it.
That's a good question.
I thought it was Gather Films. Or...
Yeah, I don't have their.
Why do you think this film was made?
I think it's the same reason that there's so much awareness about breast cancer and other problems that people are ashamed of. There's been so much shame about mental health and substance use. I think that it's time, and it's been time for a long time, since the 70s, for people to bring about that awareness, to stop associating every drug, you know, every addict and alcoholic with criminality. But that also occurs in our lives, too, and how to deal with that as well. You know, how to come back from having commit legal problems, you know, broken laws that you have to live with for the rest of your life, too. I mean, that's a double whammy. So I think that's why they made the movie.
Yeah, I would agree. Well said.
Mm-hmm. Bring awareness.
What is your interest in this film, each of you?
Well, so I'm the director for the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence here in Juneau, the Juneau affiliate of the national organization. And together with Michelle, who's director of clinical services at Gastineau Human Services, we also got support from Rainforest Recovery, which is our local treatment center, and Juneau Youth Services. So all of us behavioral health providers have partnered together to bring this documentary to town, really just to raise awareness and educate our community. And Michelle and I both have a personal interest in it as well. I'm a person who's in long-term recovery, which means I haven't used drugs or alcohol in almost 4 years. So I definitely feel empowered when I can hear stories and see, you know, the faces. There's like people like Patrick Kennedy who are featured in this film, you know, for example, some like really great leaders and people in our country who are in recovery and have this personal story to share.
Mm-hmm. I also am in long-term recovery from alcohol addiction. So I haven't used alcohol or any drugs in 5 years, or close to 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Good. Is this film appropriate for everyone, all audiences?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So I've been speaking with Michelle Federico and Katie Chapman about the film The Anonymous People. And again, it's playing at the Goldtown Theater tomorrow night, which is Wednesday, November 13th at 7 p.m. And also Saturday at 4 o'clock. And is there a cost to this film?
It is free.
Okay, that's great. And, yeah, thank you for bringing this film here. The film is about an hour and a half long. And I understand you want to tell our audience about Prisoner Reentry Forum and Peer Panel. So go ahead.
Sure. So Michelle and I happen to also wear another hat in the community. I'm chair and Michelle is co-chair for the Juno Reentry Coalition. And this is a community coalition that was formed last January in response to the high recidivism rates that we have here in Alaska for men and women who are coming out of jail and prisons. So this coalition was formed to, basically our mission is to promote public safety, but also to identify ways that we can eliminate some of the barriers that these men and women have when coming back into our communities and just really to increase their overall well-being. So one of our first events that we are organizing as a coalition is this Prisoner Reentry Forum and Peer Panel. On Saturday, we trained about 15 men and women who are in recovery and who've had lived experience of being incarcerated, and five of them, including one family member, are going to be present at this panel, and they're going to share their stories with the community, their experiences of going through their addiction and having been in jail and what some of the troubles they're experiencing coming back into our community. So this event is open to the public. Anybody and everyone who's interested in reentry is welcome to join us and have a dialogue. So it's free.
And when and where is the forum?
It's this Thursday from 6:30 to 8:30 at Northern Light Church.
Great. So Thursday, November 14th. And the dates for the film, The Anonymous People, is tomorrow night at 7 and Saturday at 4. Thanks so much for
coming in
and thanks for doing this for the community.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Ethan Side.
And this is Catherine Noreen.
Here from the Juno Douglas High School hockey team.
And we're here to pump you up.
And invite you to this weekend's home games, Friday at 8.
And Saturday at 7.
At the Treadwell Ice Arena.
Tickets are available at the door.
Come support your local high school hockey team.
We will rock you.
That's Crimson Bear Hockey.
This weekend at Treadwell Arena.
See you there.
Avast ye, you errant lobsterheads. Tis time to set sail for Treasure Island. Robert Louis Stevenson's swashbuckling tale opens November 8th at Perseverance Theater. Come with me, your trusty mate, Long John Silver, to discover the secret of Treasure Island and determine the fate of young Jim Hawkins. Chock full of adventure and appropriate for pirates both young and old, this is one for your whole family.
Directed by Anita Maynard Losh. More information can be found online at perseverancetheater.org or by calling 463-TIXS.
And remember, dead men tell no tales.
This is Bird Note. In the opening lines of Melville's masterpiece, Moby Dick, the narrator, Ishmael, confesses to a damp, drizzly November in my soul. An eloquent phrase indeed. Words that also capture the mood of these gray, potentially soul-chilling fall and winter days. Ishmael's response was to go to sea on a whaling ship. Not an option for most of us, but one sure way to brighten November's damp and drizzly mood is to welcome birds into your yard with feeders and bird baths. The liveliness and calls of a batch of chickadees, nuthatches, jays, or finches will break the spell of a dreary day. Hang up a tube-shaped feeder full of black oil sunflower seeds. Scatter a mix of millet and other seeds on a platform feeder or on the ground. Hang suet in a wire feeder. The more choices you offer, the greater variety of birds you'll host. And nothing brings birds to a yard like a consistent source of water in a shallow basin. If the bustle, color, and sounds of the birds don't break the dark mood, there's always that whaling ship. Learn a lot more about inviting birds to your yard and how to protect them when they arrive. Begin at our website, birdnote.org.
And you're listening to KTOO in Juneau, Alaska, and this is a Juneau afternoon. And my last guests in the studio here are Shona Strouser, and she has two young actors with her, and they are Cedar Miles and Selma Houck. And welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
Welcome to the studio. And they are here to talk about Perseverance Theater's Young Company, and I believe that they're also here to talk about the performance that's coming up. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so the Young Company is actually a group of young actors, ages 10 to 16. Usually we go up to 16. This time I think our oldest is 14, maybe 13. Yes, 13. Yes. And so these actors, we have a fall company and we have a spring company. And each semester we do a show, we do one production. And this semester we've decided to do The Boxcar Children. So that's based on the famous stories. Yeah.
Famous stories?
Yeah, The Boxcar Children is actually a book that was written in the 20s. It came out in 1929, I believe. And there's a whole series of them. There's like 100 Boxcar Children books.
Oh.
At first, it's these four kids who are orphaned. Their parents die in an accident, and there's a caseworker who's trying to keep them all together, but one of the adults suggests that the family split, and the kids aren't having that, so they just take off. They decide, we're going to go live on our own, and they stumble upon this boxcar, and then they, yeah, take care of themselves, and kind of things go from there.
Is this a fictional story?
Yeah, it is fictional.
It's fictional, yeah. But could be true. I mean, realistic?
Sure, I guess so.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Pretty realistic.
So, Cedar, what is your part in this play?
I play Henry Alden. He is a 14-year-old, twins with Selma here.
Jesse Alden.
Yeah, Jesse Alden. We are pretty much, we are like mind readers. We're both the same. We talk the same. We think of the same things. We pretty much act the same.
Yeah. We have a lot of lines where we stay in stereo.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. So how many people in the family that you're in the play?
There are four children. Henry and Jesse are the two oldest twins. They're both 14. And then Violet, who I think she's 9, and then Benny, who's 6.
And how many students or young people are in the whole production?
There's 9.
Nine. Yep. And what's the age range for that?
Ages 10 to 13, actually. Yep. I think everybody kind of falls in that age range.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When did they start work on this performance, and how many hours a week do they put into it?
Yeah, sure. Well, we started a while ago. We rehearse every Tuesdays and Thursdays from 4 to 6 p.m. And we do a lot of different things. Like we do acting exercises, we work on voice, we work on just listening and do a lot of acting games and stuff. So it's actually a lot about process, too. And then we get pretty hardcore into rehearsal kind of the last month. And then we still do the Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then we add the Saturdays. But this week we're rehearsing every week to, or every night to make sure that our show is up and running smoothly.
So what's the most fun part of all of this?
Mm-hmm. Pretty much hanging out with friends and enjoying the whole play.
Did you meet new friends?
Yes. Yes.
Good.
Actually, the person next to me, Jesse, is actually one of my new
We've friends. We've become pretty good friends.
Yeah.
I make them hang out a lot together, run
yeah.
lines.
Yeah.
Well, you speak in unison,
yeah.
so.
Yeah.
Are you starting to speak in unison? Or?
Actually, we did that before we came
we
in
have.
Here. We actually did.
We've done it a couple of times.
That's strange.
Yeah. Theater's fun like that. That yeah. You know, you get to meet a lot of new people and do a lot of different things.
And really
things.
Get into the part, huh? Mm-hmm. What's your
yeah.
most fun thing, Cedar?
The most funnest thing is to... Just, I really don't know. It's just pretty much everything.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is just.
How about you, Selma?
I really like the friends aspect of it. Also, just getting to work on the things that we work on and grow as actors through this amazing program. We always get to put on really fun shows. I've actually been in Young Company for 3 years now.
Oh, so you're experienced.
Yeah. And I've learned a lot over those past 3 years
mm-hmm.
about everything, and the shows are always really fun.
Will you do it again next year?
I hope so, yes.
Good. How about you, Cedar, will you?
I've done plays before, and
mm-hmm.
this isn't my first one, but this is actually my first one in Young Company with Perseverance, and it's very exciting to be on this journey.
So the performances of the Boxcar Children are this month, all in November, that's correct?
They're actually this weekend. So,
yeah.
Yeah, we've got Friday night, we have a show at 7:30. We have another show Saturday night at 7:30. We have a Sunday show, a 2 p.m. matinee. And we're doing something a little unorthodox. We're actually performing on Monday and Tuesday nights. So it's just a five performances only, and it's this Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Well, that's going to be a busy week for you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we hope so.
We're getting there.
You're getting there.
Yeah.
You've got a few days to go. What's the cost of the play?
It's $10 for adults and $5 for students. And we are not pre-selling the tickets, so tickets are available right at the door. And we actually are running two shows simultaneously at Perseverance Theater. So Treasure Island is on the main stage, and these kids are on the second stage,
oh.
and they're happening at the very same time. So if you get caught in the Treasure Island milieu of people, then
you're
just
the
need
place.
To... Yeah, just look for me. I've got big hair.
So I understand the Young Company is a 6-week program twice a year. When will the next program be?
Yeah, the next program will start in February, and actually a man named Tom Robinall is directing that, and he's actually in Treasure Island. He's one of the pirates. He's a great performer, a great director, and I'm really excited that he's going to be working with the young people. He's new to town from Fairbanks.
Has the next play been selected?
We're working on that. It's sometimes kind of difficult to choose a play before because you don't know how many students will enroll, but we're working on that. We want to do something that I like to do things that are a little suspenseful, so hopefully he'll want to do that too.
So if a person's interested in joining a future Young Company program, what can they do?
They can check our website, perseverancetheater.org. And that's theater with an R-E. Or they can always give me a buzz at the theater at 364-2421. And my name's Shona, and I'm there all the time.
So what's the hardest thing, Selma and Cedar, about doing this?
I think just learning our lines, getting them all down and memorized
mm-hmm.
is probably the hardest part. Although sometimes it can be really fun, it's... definitely difficult.
You yes. get together and learn lines?
Yes.
We
and,
do.
Yeah, that's what
do
actually what we've been doing.
We've been doing that every day for
yeah.
a couple of days. So.
Yeah.
Well, sounds like fun. So I've been talking with Shona Strausser and a couple of young actors, Cedar Miles and Selma Halk, and they are in the performance The Boxcar Children. And the performances are, can you just run through that again?
Yeah, of course. So we have a performance Friday night at 7:30 p.m. We have a performance Saturday night at 7:30 p.m. We have a Sunday matinee at 2 p.m. And then we have two performances. Well, we have a performance Monday night at 7:30 and then Tuesday at 7:30 also.
And tickets are $10 for adults, $5 for students, and... buy them at the door.
That is correct. And there's 30 seats, so it's not a huge theater. It's a pretty small space. It's intimate, a lot of fun.
Okay, well, I wish you both good luck, all three of you, actually. Good luck on this. Are you the director of this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I wish you all good luck and have a good time with it.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And that's it for today's Juno Afternoon. Thanks for joining me. Thanks to all the guests today and to Jeff Brown for producing this program. To listen to any of today's interviews or any other Juno Afternoon program, visit the KTOO.org website under Local Programs and Juno Afternoon. Please join us tomorrow at 3 p.m. for Juno Afternoon. Our host will be Ann Fuller. We'll get an update on Theater in the Rough's presentation of Ladies of the Camellias with guest Erin Elmore. We'll talk with Shasha Higby about preparing for the Wearable Art Extravaganza. We'll learn about this week's Wildlife Wednesday presentation with nature artist Kathy Hocker. We'll get the details about high school hockey, and we'll highlight the Juno Douglas City Museum's annual meeting and presentation by Richard Karstensen. That, Writer's Almanac, music, and more, tomorrow at 3 on KTOO-FM. Tonight, rain late likely, then snow likely late. Snow accumulation less than 1 inch, snow level 600 feet early in the evening, lows 27 to 31. Wednesday, mostly cloudy, chance of snow in the morning. Then chance of rain in the afternoon, highs around 38. Wednesday night, rain likely, snow level 1,000 feet late, lows around 35. Thursday, rain, highs around 40, southeast wind 10 to 20 miles per hour. Thursday night, decreasing clouds, slight chance of rain in the evening. Friday and Saturday, Friday night, partly cloudy, highs around 36, lows 24 to 34. This is KTOO Juno. We rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Stay tuned for All Things Considered.
there is a big problem of water supply, of electricity, of manpower.
Problems facing the Philippines after the devastation inflicted by Typhoon Haiyan.
It's Tuesday, November 12th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Audie Cornish. Coming up, the difficulties posed to relief agencies in the Philippines by geography.
If Haiti's a 10, I think that the Philippines would be 11 at this stage.
In the Northwest, an outbreak of gonorrhea has public health officials offering a service to patients, calls to their sex partners.
Some people cry. Some people get really angry. Some people don't want to talk to me at all. A lot of people are really anxious to know who it was. Of course, I can't say anything whatsoever that would identify that.
And will Ukraine opt to break loose from its Russian orbit?
Now, the news. From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. The Pentagon is considering sending additional assets to help with